This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Let's test your knowledge of slavery, the kinds of things that high schoolers are learning, or at least should be. Try this question. It's multiple choice. What formally ended slavery in the United States? Was it A, the Emancipation Proclamation, B, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, C, the treaty ending the Civil War, D, the Civil Rights Act of 1968? Give up? B, the 13th Amendment. Now look, don't beat yourself up if you got this one wrong. 3 out of 5 high schoolers also missed it in a recent survey. And perhaps it's easy to see why. Plenty of schools are struggling to teach slavery effectively, or at least inoffensively.
More controversy over a lesson that was designed to teach students about America's history of slavery. Instead, outraged parents learning that a mock slave auction was held in class, dividing students by race.
Middle school 118 teacher had several black students lying face down on the floor, and at one point even stepped on at least one of their backs, saying, quote, "How does it feel? See how it feels to be a slave."
The teacher allegedly called the African American students to the front of the room to act like slaves for a skit.
Fourth grade students at our Redeemer Lutheran School were handed a group assignment in English class. The question, give 3 good reasons for slavery and 3 bad reasons.
Okay, for the record, there were no good reasons for slavery. But there are excellent reasons to improve how we teach this uncomfortable history because it's still relevant to America today. Joining us from WOSU Public Radio in Columbus, Ohio, is Hassan Kwame Jeffries. He's an associate professor at Ohio State University and the chair of the Teaching Hard History Advisory Board. Hassan, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joining us from Montgomery, Alabama, is Maureen Costello, the director of Teaching Tolerance, a project supported by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Maureen, welcome.
Hi, Joshua. Good to be here.
And in New York, Adam Sanchez is a high school history teacher and a member of the Zen Education Project. Adam, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Adam, I'm a student in your class. You say, okay, today we're talking about slavery, and of course, I roll my eyes and I complain, oh God, do we have to talk about that? That was forever ago. How do you explain to me why we have to talk about slavery in 2018?
Well, first of all, we have to talk about slavery because, as you know, the SPLC report says that there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I see that when I come into my classroom. You know, it's very rare that a student comes into my classroom. I teach in New York City at Harvest Collegiate High School, and it's very rare that a student comes into my classroom knowing that we had slavery in New York. Right? Just the basic that it existed in the North. But beyond that, you know, there's all sorts of myths that students enter the classroom with. One of the activities I open up with is a close reading of Lincoln's inaugural speech, because I ask students, okay, if you know everything about slavery, who freed the slaves? And of course, they all say Abraham Lincoln. And if you ask people on the street, that's probably what they would say, and say, okay, so what do you think was in his first inaugural speech? And they list all sorts of things, you know, oh, slavery's morally reprehensible, it needs to be abolished, et cetera. And then we actually read excerpts from his first inaugural speech, where he essentially, you know, says, and I'm paraphrasing here, stop freaking out, South. I've never said publicly that I want to do anything with slavery in the South. And in fact, I'll support this 13th Amendment that will take away Congress's ability to ever do anything about interfere with the states and the institution of slavery, and I'll enforce the Fugitive Slave Act.
Adam, I hate to interrupt you, but I just looked up the speech. He actually, in the inaugural address, and I'm just to back you up, on March 4th, 1861, President Lincoln said, quote, "I have no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so, and I have no inclination to do so," unquote.
Right. Right. And this is a huge shocker for students, right? Because for them, they realize that this is in some ways a lie that they've been taught, or at least a particular narrative that they've been taught. And it's a deep shock. And it opens up all sorts of questions about what else have I been lied to about? And of course, you know, by his second inaugural address, Lincoln's basically saying we need to wipe the slave-owning class off the map. But the question arises, that what happens in between, mm-hmm. right? And that story, I think, is crucial to get students to delve into, because you can't tell that story without talking about the resistance of the enslaved themselves. You can't tell that story without talking about the massive abolitionist movement.
Maureen Costello, let's talk a little bit about the report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC report that Adam just alluded to. Is there any one particular finding that most surprised you in terms of the things that high schoolers, that young people don't know, or the reasons why they don't know it? What jumped out at you?
I hate to say this. Nothing actually surprised me about this report. It depressed me, but it didn't surprise me particularly. The beliefs, you know, that Lincoln freed the slaves, that probably, you know, that many slaves escaped on the Underground Railroad, or that the entire North was abolitionists, are drilled in childhood, practically. So when we realize that, it's so interesting that you talked about the first inaugural, because Lincoln says it's not legal for me to do so. And what he's doing is he's talking about the foundation in the Constitution and the way the Constitution actually enshrines slavery and protects it. And that's something that kids aren't taught. So they got wrong not only that the 13th Amendment was the way it was ended, but they also got wrong a question on the fact that the Constitution actually supported slavery. We're really finding that there's just the knowledge that's out there is pretty shallow, and there are huge missing chunks. The idea that it existed throughout the country, the idea that the North really depended on it, on the profits of slavery, even after northern states abolished it.
Yes.
The idea that racism was created and invented, the idea about race, to support slavery, and the way it still has an impact on our lives today. These are just blank spaces in our teaching.
Hassan Kwame Jeffries, I think in the last year or so, the impact of this has become very clear, even in our popular culture. You know, you had Chief of Staff John Kelly in an interview with Fox News giving that comment about slavery thriving because of the lack of an inability to compromise that led to the Civil War. You have Ava DuVernay's documentary 13th about the 13th Amendment and its link to the current correction system. Even just this weekend, when I went to go see the movie Black Panther, there's so much of the themes in Black Panther that don't make sense if you don't understand slavery in America. There are pieces of the film that are so emotional because of what we know about slavery. So it feels like to me, I don't know if you see it this way, but it feels to me like there is so much that's happening even right now that makes these lessons extremely important.
Well, certainly slavery has always been relevant to the contemporary moment, whenever that contemporary moment is. But I think you're right. There is something coalescing at this particular moment from different angles. So the approach that an Ava DuVernay is using to talk about slavery, dealing with the 13th Amendment and mass incarceration, is somewhat different than the conjuring of slavery that Kelly is using when he's talking about sort of too bad a compromise, you know, didn't take place. And I think that reflects sort of the broad range of understanding and misunderstanding about what the institution of slavery was and what it has meant in the century and a half since its abolition.
We are speaking to Hassan Kwame Jeffries, Maureen Costello, and Adam Sanchez about the way we teach or don't teach slavery as part of America's history in America's classrooms. We'd love to hear from you, too. What questions do you have about the way these lessons are taught? Or what stories can you share about how to teach this well or how to teach it poorly? Email 1A at WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. We heard from a number of you who shared your stories about the way you were taught thought about slavery. Here's one story that came into our inbox.
Hi, this is Tom. I live in St. Louis, Missouri. I recall as a child in the Deep South that in 1964, my history teacher insisted that the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery. And I would say that's pretty indicative of the inability to talk honestly about the Civil War.
Tom, thanks for calling in. Hassan, I know we have to pause in just a moment, but does that seem to kind of be the crux of where this problem starts? A lot of our comments had to do with teachers insisting that there was no link between slavery and the Civil War. Is that kind of the heart of this problem?
Well, I don't know if it's the heart of it, but it's certainly reflective of the continuing miseducation with regard to slavery. I mean, part of it is a defense of the Confederacy and all that means, but it's also more than just sort of a Southern thing. It's also a defense of the Constitution and the founding of the nation and a hesitance and reluctance to deal with sort of the origins of the nation in the institution of slavery and its dependence in slavery. So there's a lot going on. But I think that question that slavery had nothing to do with the Civil War, as reflected in what the students are giving us and not being able to identify slavery as the primary cause, is really reflective of this broader misunderstanding of the role of slavery in American history.
Estelle wrote on our Facebook page, as a white child in the South, I mainly learned about slavery through watching the annual airings of Roots. I don't recall learning much about it in school. We'll talk more about how students are learning about slavery today with Maureen Costello, Hassan Kwame Jeffries, Adam Sanchez, and you. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We are discussing how we teach American slavery and why we tend to get a little bit uncomfortable when that topic comes up with Hassan Kwame Jeffries, an associate professor of history at The Ohio State University, high school history teacher Adam Sanchez and a member of the Zinn Education Project, and Maureen Costello, the director of Teaching Tolerance and a member of the senior leadership team at the Southern Poverty Law Center. We'd love to hear from you, too. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Interesting to see how some of you are teaching about slavery. Aaron wrote on our Facebook page, I am a middle and high school teacher, and I've taught American slavery in both types of schools. While I think it is hard to teach the subject, it is so vitally important if we are going to try to understand contemporary racial issues. The challenge for teachers is finding quality resources, because history is written by the victors. But when armed with the right resources and taught effectively, it can result in a more educated and, more importantly, empathetic group of citizens. More Thought tweeted, I'm a high school African-American history teacher for 17 years. While often tough, I focus on humanizing both the enslaved and the enslavers. I identify economic motives and the justifications for its continuation that create our racial beliefs today. We must always connect to their experience. Hassan Kwame Jeffries, talk about what you encounter when you're encountering new students in college. What do they know about American slavery? And what kinds of misconceptions do they have? Are they generally coming to you with a decent understanding of history, or do you have a lot of remediation to do?
No, there's a lot of remediation, as you say, intervention that needs to be done. Currently, I teach it in Ohio at Ohio State University. So my students are somewhat unique because Ohio has such a connection to the Underground Railroad. So students in the Ohio area have heard of the Underground Railroad, but you know, there's still so many flaws and holes in what they actually do know about the institution of slavery. So as Adam was pointing out, you know, slavery was a Southern thing. It didn't exist in places like New York or Massachusetts and the like. So there's a lot. So there's two things, really. One, it's what they know tends to be limited, and what they know often tends to be wrong. For example, slavery wasn't sort of a central leading cause of the Civil War. You get that a lot. But then also, there has to be some unpacking of what they think they know. So a lot of times they are taught about world slavery or slavery in sort of world history, you know, in sort of a Greek tradition, if you will. And then, you know, the way that is taught somewhat of a benign, you can sort of move through society sort of version, they then apply that to American slavery.
Hassan, I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you.
Two things are completely different.
I hate to interrupt you, but I just want to make sure we're clear on the differences between that kind of historical ancient Greek form of slavery and American chattel slavery. Slavery in other cultures was a different kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I recall, slavery in other cultures was treated very differently. Slaves could be treated as more part of a household. Their masters or owners could be severely legally punished if their slaves came into harm. Eventually, you could even become free by serving the terms of your servitude. It wasn't like being a black slave in America.
Right. And it's really what happens with the transatlantic slave trade is the introduction of a new form of involuntary servitude in the history of humanity. And what is so unique and different about anything that comes before it and after it is that in transatlantic slavery, American slavery, as we're talking about here, African people are removed from the human family. The status of enslavement or slave, if you will, that property status is transferable from mother to child. So we're talking about two things that are fundamentally different. And when students are introduced to this sort of old world, if you will, forms of involuntary servitude, they take that with them into this understanding of American slavery, and they're completely missing its meaning and its import and its foundation to America.
Hey, if you're listening right now and you are interested in this conversation about the way we teach slavery, perhaps you are beginning to realize that there are certain aspects of your understanding of slavery that are flawed or thoroughly biased. I'm curious to know if there are any questions bouncing around in your mind that you wish you had someone you could ask, but were afraid to ask. What do you wish you understood about the experience of slavery in America that you've just been too uncomfortable to ask or to look up? Now might be a good time to ask that. We'd be interested to know where some of the gaps are in your knowledge. So email us, 1A at WAMU.org, or tweet us at 1A. Adam, I'd like to talk more about your experiences in the classroom in terms of being a teacher who's trying to impart these lessons and what you see from other teachers. One instructor whose email we read mentioned the difficulty in finding resources. How much of a challenge is just having the right books or the right curriculum guides to be able to impart a good lesson?
I mean, I think that's a challenge, but I think there's also some good resources out there. You know, the Zen Education Project, Teaching Tolerance, has a bunch of great stuff that teachers can use. And I think for different regions, right? There are different issues that come up. So, like the gentleman, I think your caller that you talked about in the South, right, that a big issue is about the idea that the Civil War was about slavery. And I think, you know, if you read the declarations of secession with your students, it's very clear in all of them that that they are about slavery. In the North, in New York City, I think where I teach, a much bigger issue is this complicating the idea of the anti-slavery North, right? We look at my students are shocked to find out that when the South secedes, the New York City mayor makes a speech where he says, you know, we should secede with them, right? And that gets at the deep connections between Wall Street and the slave trade, between the cotton trade in New York and the South. And so these are, I think, key issues to bring up with students. And then I think more than anything, what is so crucial about the time period of the Civil War and Reconstruction is that it's a time period where you have this bottom-up resistance of abolitionists and enslaved people that fundamentally shifts the political terrain that people like Lincoln and those at the top are operating on. And that is a crucially relevant lesson for students to learn today.
Adam, I have to say I've noticed something just in the short time that we've been talking. I noticed that you tend to lapse into lessons, which is cool. There's nothing wrong with that. But I have a feeling that there is a part of you that feels a real urgency to teach this because it's taught so poorly so often.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you see the stories coming out of these kind of incredibly problematic simulations that teachers are doing. And I think there's ways to do role play and there's ways to do simulation that you know are really useful, right? Like I do a role play where students are abolitionists and they debate the questions of that abolitionists debate. And so I think, you know, you're right, you know, that part of the urgency of this is that it's so poorly taught. And there's a lot of work that teachers have to do to make sure that our colleagues are teaching it better.
Speaking of which, you know, Maureen, there are some examples in the tape that we heard at the beginning of the program and even in your report that are pretty egregious of incredibly bad lessons on slavery. And some of our listeners are sharing those stories too. Maddie tweeted, "When I was in grade school in the early 2000s, my music teacher announced we would have Slave Day, during which our all-white class sang spirituals while we cleaned her classroom. It wasn't until later that I realized how tasteless and shallow that was." Maureen, I can only imagine if I was in school and my teacher did that, I'm pretty sure my mother would make sure somebody went home with a fat lip. I am hoping that these stories are the exception and not the rule. But what did you find?
They're so commonplace. You know, I have gotten used to every year seeing a news report or two about these, because what happens is parents get really angry and they march into schools, and then unsatisfied usually with the answer, they go to the press. We asked teachers about what their favorite lesson for teaching about slavery and also what they disliked about teaching slavery. And much to our chagrin, many of the favorite lessons were reenactments. Apparently, it's very, very common to reenact the Middle Passage now. And in fact, one teacher told us that she won an award for this lesson.
Really?
And reenacting the Middle Passage may mean that, you know, you pull chairs together, you cover them with tar paper so it's dark, and you crowd kids underneath for 15 minutes. So we saw lots and lots and lots of these things. I think they're very common in elementary school for a couple of reasons. One is, of course, that social studies education, particularly in elementary school, doesn't really focus on history itself. There's a lot of emphasis on so-called experiential education. As Adam pointed out, there are good simulations and bad simulations, and I'd say here's the distinction. A good role play is one that engages the mind. So, for instance, to take the perspective of an abolitionist, or to be put into a lesson where choices have to be made amongst contending groups, that's a great role play. A bad role play is one that engages the affect, you know, that is designed to make you feel something. And frankly, to some extent, I almost think of it as human experimentation. You know, we should not be putting kids in classrooms where they are under the power of a teacher who is subjecting them to an emotional experience that probably, first of all, is not particularly instructive and is potentially damaging.
Well, I kind of wonder about that, Hassan, if I could come back to you. You know, when you mentioned they put them under a tarp and crowded them in, I hear what you're saying, particularly because anyone who's been to the National Museum of African American History and Culture here in Washington, if you go, the top three floors are culture, the bottom three floors are history. You start on the bottom floor with the slave trade. And the area, that part of the museum, is very cramped and very narrow and very dark. The light kind of comes through in slats over your head like you were in the hold of a slave ship. It is extremely uncomfortable, and it's perfect. Because as an adult, I'm ready for that lesson, for the visceral and for the intellectual. But Hassan, I wonder if you could take on Nathan's question, who asked, how do we break down the teaching of slavery based on education levels as we get more in depth, as we progress our education through to university? What should we be looking for in terms of teaching slavery at age-appropriate levels?
Well, first, I think it's important that we do teach it at age-appropriate levels, that we do scaffolding. But that doesn't mean in kindergarten or first grade we're talking to kids about this is what the Middle Passage is and this is what it meant to be separated from your home country, your native land. I think there are ways to introduce ideas and concepts, ideas of fairness, ideas of justice, ideas of right and wrong at a very early age, so that when you get to the later educational grades, later educational years, kids are not shocked and surprised when you introduce these ideas that were undergirding slavery. So one of the problems, for example, with the way we teach slavery is that we do it out of context. And so you either introduce one or two heroes, a Harriet Tubman, a Frederick Douglass, and say, oh, look at these black folk who survived during this really weird sort of earlier period, divorced from the context. And so later on, when you talk about, if you get there, talk about the horrors of slavery and its and the real difficulties and challenges that they posed to enslaved people, to African people, it doesn't make any sense. So if you have to scaffold, yes, you have to introduce concepts of right, wrong, fairness, inequality, equality early on, and then you introduce the historical concepts or the historical reality, the truth of the matter, as you move through the grades.
Glad to hear a number of you talking to us about the impact of learning slavery and how that's affected you. Renee emailed, listening to your show right now, I've realized that I've never been taught the distinction between American slavery and slavery in the rest of history. As a Christian, this has a huge effect on my understanding of the Bible as well, especially the explanation of the dehumanizing of American slaves. Willix tweeted, America never wants to talk about the evils of its past. It's at best glazed over or swept under a rug. Until we learn to face our past, all of it, we won't be able to heal, learn, or grow from our past. Maureen Costello, could you jump on that, particularly some of the issues with textbooks and lessons that euphemize the slave experience, calling slaves, you know, workers and things like that, particularly in larger states like, say, Texas, that have tremendous power over what goes into textbooks?
Yeah, that's one of the problems of the textbook industry. You know, they're writing the textbooks for the big states, excuse me, that have adoption processes. And Texas has very close rules about how to present history. So the most famous case that you're talking about was the one where slaves were referred to rather euphemistically as workers. Excuse me.
That's right.
I'm also reminded, however, that we saw textbooks that slip into the passive voice when discussing slavery. So, for instance, another textbook talks about how slaves were brought to Virginia without mentioning who brought them. Or slaves were used to work the fields without mentioning who was using them. So what we have is slavery without enslavers.
I wonder also, Adam, if I could come to you with regard to the curriculum question. You're part of a group called the Zinn Education Project. The name Howard Zinn may be familiar to some folks. He was the author of A People's History of the United States, a book that has both been celebrated and criticized over time. It kind of upended what a lot of people were taught about American history. I know we're kind of close to a break, but I know that depending on who is setting the curriculum, that can also set people's teeth on edge as well. How do you think we should be thinking through who writes the curriculum, who sets the course for how we teach kids about slavery?
Right. Well, I mean, I think the best way to do it is to get teachers together to discuss these issues before they get in the classroom and teach them, and write curriculum together, and write curriculum with people like Hassan, who, you know, academics who know deeply about this stuff and can help teachers think it through. And you know, I think it also drawing on the resources, the good resources that are out there on zinedproject.org and so forth. And I think part of the power of Zinn's approach, which is what the Zinn Education Project is about, is Zinn's approach is looking at this history from the bottom up, that you can't really understand the question of who freed the slaves by looking at it from Lincoln's perspective. You have to look at the perspectives of enslaved people resisting. You have to look at the perspectives of abolitionists on the ground, because that's the only way we can truly understand understand this history.
T tweeted, "Can your guests suggest a few well-rounded books to read that would serve to re-educate someone on the subject of slavery and the Civil War in the U.S.? I'm sure I know some of the books that I think Adam would suggest based on the project he's with, but we'll get some more suggestions and continue our conversation about teaching slavery in America for today's young people. Stay close." Well, today's conversation is about teaching the past. Tomorrow, we will consider shaping humanity's future. And we'd love to hear from you. We'll be speaking to Michio Kaku, a noted physicist and futurist, about his predictions for how technology might affect the human race. Now, these predictions go far beyond things like the impact of artificial intelligence or cyber warfare. Some of them speak to how our everyday lives could become dramatically different, maybe even better. What are your expectations for humanity 20 years from now? What's the biggest positive change you're expecting from technology, and maybe even the biggest negative change? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. We'd especially love to hear from you if you are working on something today that would impact humankind about 20 years from now. Where do you see technology taking us? And how are you trying to impact that? Tell us your story. 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212. And we will share some of your stories in the very near future, tomorrow, in fact, on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Hassan Kwame Jeffries, Maureen Costello, and Adam Sanchez. Adam, I wonder if I could start with a clip from the ABC series Black-ish that kind of gets to why some of this history is so very difficult, and we've alluded to it before. This is a clip from the season premiere. It's a clip of Allo Black, a musician, singing a song about slavery to educate some of the white characters in the show about slavery's history. You'll hear the song and then the reaction from a white character, Mr. Stevens, at the end, and fans of Schoolhouse Rock might love this, or maybe hate it. Listen.
I am a slave in the home of the brave, a product of the triangular trade. Please pardon my ways if I'm nervous or the slightest bit skittish. In the presence of the Portuguese, Spanish, Dutch, or British, they kept me in colonial chains. Tell me how to persuade them to chill or to save me if still I'm a slave.
That was not uncomfortable at all.
That was Allo Black singing in the season 4 premiere of Black-ish on ABC. Now, Adam, I know this is just a sitcom, it's a social satire, but I think he's kind of getting at something, that the discomfort seems to be inherent to the lesson of slavery, and yet that is exactly why it's so hard for some people to talk about slavery. Is that just an inherent catch-22, or can educators try to lessen the discomfort and still provide an accurate lesson?
I mean, I guess it depends on the discomfort of whom you're talking about, right? I mean, in some cases, white people might feel uncomfortable, right? White students might feel uncomfortable talking about slavery. And I think, you know, that could be a good thing, and you want to push past that. I think, obviously, you know, the uncomfort of your black students is something very different, and you should think about how you're teaching about it. I mean, one of the ways I think, you know, is the best way to talk about the horrors and trauma of that happened under slavery is by talking about the resistance of the enslaved and the different ways that enslaved people resisted slavery. Because by learning about the different ways that people and reasons the behind people, for example, running away, you know, one form of resistance, you know, it it tells you about the horrors of slavery, right? A lot of the time when they were running away to another plantation to see their family that had been sold away, right? And so I think that's one way to approach it. And just to answer the question that one of the people who wrote in asked earlier, I think three books that for me really fundamentally changed my perspective around these issues. One, and I use excerpts from these in the classroom. One is Complicity, How the North Promoted, Prolonged, and Profited from Slavery. The other one by David Williams is I Freed Myself, which talks about the history of enslaved resistance and how that plays a crucial role, particularly during the Civil War. And the last one is the late Lerone Bennett Jr.'s Black Power USA, which covers the period of Reconstruction, which way too often we end talking about this issue at the Civil War. And I think more teachers need to do a better job of not just talking about slavery, but also talking about the Reconstruction, because it's such a crucial period to understand so much about today's world.
I wonder, Hassan, if you could also take on that question that T tweeted, asking for a few well-rounded books to read that would serve to re-educate someone on the subject of slavery and the Civil War in the U.S. Hassan?
Well, I think a good overview is somewhat of a classic, and that is Edmund Morgan's American Slavery, American Freedom. And I would also add a sort of posthumous shout out to Lerone Bennett Jr. To pair with Black Power USA, his classic, one of the ones that was handed to me as a youngster, The Shaping of Black America, which sort of looks at that balance that Adam so rightly points out, not only the horror and brutality of slavery, but then also the resistance to it. Because in focusing on the resistance, you get at the humanity. That's where the hope is in this story.
We're also getting some book suggestions from some of you. Christine emailed, the Addie books in the American Girl series are a manageable way to introduce the subject of American slavery to the 7 to 10-year-old set. Addie is a girl of about 10. She's forced by the overseer to eat the caterpillars she missed picking off the cotton leaves. She observes her father and brother being beaten. She escapes with her mother to the north where they struggle. The books are infused with enough hope and kindness that they're a good way into the subject. Maureen Costello, what about you? Any books that you would recommend? Or maybe on the flip side, any books that you have seen that may be popular for the wrong reasons that, in your opinion, parents should avoid?
Well, I would recommend two, actually, for the person who wants to freshen their own knowledge. One is Ed Baptist, The Half Has Never Been Told. And the other is Ibram Kendi, X. Kendi's book, Stamped from the Beginning, which is the history of racism in America. I'd also like to, Joshua, just jump back to that whole issue of what makes it uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can say that, okay, part of our history is hard and it's uncomfortable to talk about the ways that we've done badly. But when you think about it, you know, there were horrible conditions, for instance, for the Irish, or there were horrible conditions that immigrants had to go through. And teachers are not uncomfortable talking about those things. And they're not, because those folks have, within a generation or two, achieved full status of citizenship and all the perks that white Americans enjoy. Teachers are uncomfortable teaching about slavery because of the fact that they, first of all, most of the teachers are white, and because of the unspoken element in the room, which is that 150 years after it's over, it's not over. You know, and the legacy and the impact are still there. And many teachers told us, you know, we asked them, what do you dislike about teaching slavery? And here's where their discomfort really got revealed. Teachers who have largely African-American students are worried about how they're going to feel. They want them to feel empowered. They don't want to dredge through an ugly past. They don't want them to feel shame. Teachers who teach white students don't want those white students to be angry or to feel guilt. Well, they don't want them to be guilty, but they're also afraid that they're going to get angry over, you know, the fact that they were, you know, that white people were the folks who developed the system. So until we can get comfortable and be ready to talk about the fact that what we have today is a legacy, and well, I'm talking about the disparities in health and education and problems with mass incarceration. And until teachers can really comfortably discuss race, they are going to have that discomfort. And that discomfort is going to lead to bad instruction.
I think that discomfort kind of feeds into an email we got from Paul. And Hassan, I'd love to get your thoughts to Paul, who wrote, "As far as I know, I have never been a slave owner. My parents were not, and neither of their parents were slave owners. So I find it confusing that some of the people of color in today's society still hold on to the entitlement, because of their color, that we as a society or culture owe them something simply because of their color." Hassan, what would you say to Paul?
That black folk feel entitled? I find that humorous. But what I would say is that regardless of one's individual connection through their ancestry to enslavement, whether they were enslaved slaveholders or not, holding people in bondage, if you are an American, particularly if you are a white American or an immigrant who has then become sort of white by definition in American society, you benefit from the institution of slavery, from the legacy of slavery, from the privileges that have been wrought as a result of some 250 years of free labor on the part of the United States. African Americans, and this is why it's so important to talk about slavery, not only because of what happened, but because of how the legacy of slavery continues to impact our society today. In other words, the discrimination against African Americans doesn't end at the moment of emancipation, but it continues. There's a through line from the past to the present. And I'm speaking generally here, but unless you understand that, unless you understand how the desire to keep African Americans, to continue to control their labor and regulate their behavior after emancipation, to continue to keep them out of jobs when they migrate to the North, to continue to segregate them in neighborhoods and exclude them from the suburbs, creating privilege for whites who are moving over, who didn't arrive until the 1910s, 1920s, 1930s. That is the way privilege and whiteness has accrued over the years. So it's not about a sense of entitlement to some heritage of bondage. It's about the reality of the ways in which people who are white in America continue to benefit from the discrimination against African Americans that has been rooted in the institution of slavery.
Rob in Kalamazoo emailed, "My favorite slavery conversation bit is when someone says, well, slavery was 150 years ago. They need to get over it. Then they throw on their rebel flag shirt or hat or underwear or truck flag or license plate. It's as if their history is still relevant to their identity, but slavery has no bearing on the black community today. It's rather hypocritical." David emailed, "I went to school in Nashville, Tennessee back in the 80s. I had a fifth grade teacher who believed that children needed to know the truth of slavery. He would bring in writings from former slaves and graphic pictures of what they went through. I am now an adult with mixed children and find the lessons that he taught me coming into play as I try to teach my daughters what their ancestors had to go through." Also important to acknowledge, some of you said that school is not where you primarily learned about slavery, including this listener who left a note in our inbox.
Kelly from North Olmsted, Ohio, responding to the question about being taught about slavery in our schools. When I was young, there was not very much information provided, mostly factual. When did slavery start? When did slavery end? I find as a parent now that my children get less information than I got. And so that's very disturbing. The place that I figured out teaches the most about black history and slavery in detail is through the church. The black church has been instrumental in teaching me.
Kelly, thanks very much for calling in. I know that we are low on time in the conversation, but Maureen, I wonder if you could speak to teachers who may be listening to this across the country in terms of basic do's and don'ts for teaching about slavery. Is there one like primary do and one primary don't that you want all teachers to keep in mind?
Well, I think the primary do is to teach about it with honesty, to strive to tell the full story. This is more than one do, and to use as many primary source documents as you can. As Adam pointed out, there are many places available, and we assembled a library on tolerance.org of about 100 primary source documents. So we don't want teachers to be afraid. The don't is don't assume that you're the only person in the room with some knowledge. As your previous caller who left a voice message said, I think in the black community particularly, slavery is still talked about over the dinner table and in the church. And I think it's important to have students bring that knowledge into the classroom. Adam talks about how he has to undo a lot of the wrong knowledge. But the fact is that African-American students often have a lot of right knowledge that's simply not acknowledged in the classroom.
Adam, I wonder if you could speak to the role of pop culture in terms of the way you deal with students. When a film like 12 Years a Slave comes out, for example, how do you deal with that in terms of being an educator when it pops up in pop culture or even the references that are in Black Panther? You know, how should educators deal with that?
I mean, I think it's always an opportunity for educators to re-engage students in these conversations if they're going to see the films, if they're going to if they want to talk about these films, if students want to see those films. You know, they're good ways to re-engage students in the question. I mean, I think teachers should be careful though, right? I mean, 12 Years as a Slave is a tough film, and I think it really. Really, you should think about what you're trying to get out of showing that in the classroom, or whether you know what makes sense and how you do it is, I think, a delicate matter. So, I think these are as these things are discussed in pop culture. I mean, really, teachers should be using them as an opportunity to re-engage students in whatever way you can.
And Hassan, briefly, I wonder if there's anyone that you see that other educators can look to as a kind of a model that if they just want to rethink their whole program, their whole strategy in teaching slavery, is there anyone you might point to and say, we'll start with them, they're doing it right?
Well, we actually have, in partnership with the Southern Poverty Law Center, a podcast in which we bring on a dozen or so scholars that talk about the different ways in which they actually teach history. So I think their teaching Hard History of American Slavery, the podcast, really gives examples of that. And if I could just say really quickly, I think, you know, we have, the bottom line is this, we have been committing educational malpractice in not teaching slavery correctly, accurately, and effectively. And so we have to do everything that we can in our power to teach it properly so we don't continue to miseducate another generation.
That's Hassan Kwame Jeffries, Associate Professor of History at The Ohio State University and Chair of the Advisory Board of Teaching Hard History. Hassan, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Maureen Costello of the Senior Leadership Team of the Southern Poverty Law Center and Director of Teaching Tolerance. Maureen, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
And Adam Sanchez, high school history teacher and a member of the Zinn Education Project. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Remember to send us your stories about how you expect technology to affect humanity 20 years from now, and maybe even how you're trying to affect that. 855-236-1A1A. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.